behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen.
What, do you guys have a slogan or anything like that?
Go fuck yourself is our sign off.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Whoever gets this trivia question right will definitely want it. All right. We're all ready to rock and roll?
Oh, yes.
Right. Yes. Hey, everybody. I'm Paul Goble. This is the Paul Goble Show. Welcome. We're getting a late start or early start, depending on how you look at it.
I look at it as early.
Yeah.
I say late.
So Jim Bruce, my co-host and best friend, says early. Tom?
No.
Early.
Tom also says early. But our guest, Graham Elwood, comedian, actor extraordinaire, says late.
I say late.
He says
comedian, actor, text-only reader.
My text...
Email ignorer.
I don't like emails. They're dumb. Text I like. Emails, someone could fucking be reading it. You know,
yeah. True, man.
Text, nobody.
No one could crack that technology.
The government could never. No. The phone company, they don't look at those.
No.
So, but we're all here, and that's all that matters, right? We're all here, ready
man.
To be funny and comedy.
Everyone's all here.
Yay!
Hooray! So we got Graham is one of our most requested guests, so we're glad we could fit
yelling.
Into his schedule. this is one of the few times you're actually in town for the weekend. What happened?
Got fired.
Nice.
The way it happened, just had the weekend off, and also tomorrow, Monday, we start. Well, I don't know when this
happened. What's up for the weekend, Bavo?
That is great. The sexiest man in comedy. Just
thank you.
Just
I brought that back. That's what's doing it all.
God, I hope so.
The great thing is I go, when I do this dance and then I fucking hurt my hip, show's over.
And everyone goes, what's that song from?
Oh,
a soda. tomorrow we tape the first episode of the Benson Interruption for Comedy Central.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. There was a production meeting this week, and it just worked out that way. So
that's good. So tell the kids who don't know what that is, tell everybody what that's all about.
It's a live show that Doug Benson has been doing here in L.A. for about 4 or 5 years, where he comes out, opens the show. It's a stand-up comedy show. He opens the show up. You know, he does like 5-10 minutes at the top of the show, and then he sits on stage and interrupts other comedians. And we've been doing it. We did it at M-Bar for a long time, did it at the UCB. The last year we've been doing it at Largo, and it's a blast. It's a fun show to do.
I did it once a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
So you're for sure not going to be on an episode.
No, definitely not. Who is on this first episode you're taping tomorrow?
It is... Adam Carolla, I believe, and a couple other people whose names I forget, and then me. My job is I'm going to come out at the end of every show. I'm the announcer, and I'm going to come out at the end of every show and sort of recap whatever
now,
I was talking
Adam
about.
Carolla is in the room, you guys can't actually physically touch, right?
Yes, because we were car. He, you know, I'm a part of his. I'm his rib.
Nice. You'll be reabsorbed if you touch it.
Yes.
So when now is this been picked up and it's a done deal?
It's been picked up for sure. They picked up 6 episodes. It starts airing October 28th.
Excellent.
It airs on Thursday, so it'll be a late night show on Comedy Central. So
great.
It'll be a lot of fun.
That's good. So I like that because they have enough stand up shows on Comedy Central, but. Then you do stuff like this, where it's a little different.
This is the most... I mean, one of the reasons... One of my favorite shows to do, because I don't bring a lot of prepared material to it, because it is so freestyle. It's just like a total improvised riff session. And it's a blast. I mean, it's like riffing with your buddies, just in a more, like, structured format. Slightly more structured. But it's so much fun to do, and I think... You know, Doug and I have done it a couple times on the road together. Just he interrupted me like we were at Zany's in Chicago last week. And he just came on stage and started interrupting me. And it was a blast. And I think audiences just love it because it's a, you know, audiences, when you do anything that's sort of off the cuff or spontaneous, they their heads explode.
Kind of like that Byron Allen show.
Yeah, it's really spontaneous like that when he unleashes everybody's setups so they can go into their bits and read them.
Now, Graham, you once waved at somebody who you thought was waving at you, right?
Oh, crazy story. One time, for the fans listening, Jim and Paul are continually referencing bits from my act from 1,000 years ago.
That's from, I think, the first week you were
doing
stand-up.
The first week, yes.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll say this about the show. The one time I did the show at the UCB, it was fun. And Andy Blitz.
It's funny as hell.
Andy Blitz was on the show. And, you know, he used to write for Conan. And he's super funny. But I don't think he did one joke. It was just him and Doug talking back and forth. Like, NFL Blitz had just come out. Mm-hmm. So they talked about how whoever owed him money, EA Games owed him money for that. And it was really funny. And it was a lot of funny shit. So check out that show, Comedy Lovers. Now, Graham called me earlier this week and told me that there's a historic event just passed. You want to tell everybody what that was?
Yes, I will. October 5th was the day that the three of us, me, Jim, and Paul, Tom is sitting in the room, but we're not going to let him speak. the three of us...
That's a problem because he loves to just yammer and yammer.
Yappy yapperson. We, the three of us, had packed up my Toyota Tercel, my 89 Toyota Tercel in Chicago, and drove across country 3 days, and October 5th was the day we arrived in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's...
And since then, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've cherried that out, right? Because you're a gear
Oh, yeah. I totally cherried it out.
Yo, dog.
Yes. Yes,
you
dog.
You pimped your ride?
I totally pimped my ride.
But a lot of great... You know, you've heard stories about how we all lived together back then, and... We fought and we loved, and
I remember this is a story that hasn't been told on this podcast that I enjoyed the hell out of, which was one time Paul and Graham got in such a giant yelling fight about nothing, of course, mainly about, hey, I don't like living with you, but expressed through whether or not we wanted to go to. Where we wanted to go eat or whatever. And I'm just standing there and they're going on and on and on. And then I was like, So I went back inside and went to bed.
Yeah, he left.
And they didn't notice for a good half hour. And then that was the thing that they went, oh, God, I think we're dicks. It was just funny.
He walked away. There was a lot of shit like that. But there was some fun stuff, too.
Oh, no, that was
like
fun. That
Graham
was
bringing over his girlfriend and me listening through the wall.
Oh, I'll do
that. That was always awesome.
Here's the quickest version I can say of this story. This is how it happens. 9 a.m., Graham, let's go to Vegas. Fun. Yeah. Drive up there. Fun. Drive home. Very quiet.
Very quiet. Broke. Well, we were so dumb.
That was like the first month.
Yeah,
we were in LA.
We drove to Vegas. Literally, we each had like $80 on us. It wasn't even like we went to Vegas with $500. We were so broke.
$80, by the way, not like $80 to spend in Vegas. No, we had about $80.
That's it. Yeah. We had $80. That's all we had. I look back on those times and I go, how did I pay bills?
Oh, jeez.
Like, I mean, I obviously, like, I remember my share of the rent was like $220 or something.
And I remember you really were rocking whatever credit cards you had.
Yeah, it was credit cards, and I would move furniture.
Yeah.
And then just, like, unemployment checks. Like, how did we
scrape
that?
Up some money at 7-Eleven?
Yes. I would suck dick behind 7-Elevens.
For nickels.
Sure. And I did not have the nickels to spare, but it was worth it.
That
was insane. No, you'd pick up gigs when you had to move furniture.
Yeah, I moved furniture.
When we were so broke, we couldn't even pay attention. You guys remember that?
Oh, Paul Gilbert, everybody.
You guys remember that, right?
You were so broke, you missed your appointment at your Chinese dentist.
That's right. I was so broke, I called my Chinese dentist and said, listen, I won't be in at 2:30 because I have no money.
And 2:30 to fixie.
Exactly. The other thing that, I don't know if you guys have been over at Highland.
I told you about my dog.
2:30?
I don't know if you guys have been by Highland in Santa Monica lately, but they've torn down the Del Taco over there.
No!
Yes. And it made me, I drove by there just two days ago. Yeah.
That was
literally rubble. Now, there's nothing there.
I must have done that in, like, the past 2 months.
Right? Because I drove by there just, like, 2 days ago.
Somebody finally told him the story of that lady.
Oh, my God.
I was thinking about Graham's call, and I was like, oh, and there's the Del Taco. Hey, wait! Because that's the Del Taco we always would go to after we go hang out at some stand-up show we wanted to get on or go see somebody. And it's like, well, we got $5. Let's go eat dinner at this shitty Del Taco. Because Del Taco's great. We all appreciate that. But this was the Del Taco in the heart of Hollywood that you don't want to use the bathroom in.
Well, the bathroom was one of those ones that was outside and you needed a coin.
Yeah.
It was just sad.
And it was just like tons of bums in there. And the best was one night we're all there eating. And Graham looks at someone behind me and goes, and he looks and is like, well, would you, like, he goes through a variety of emotions all at once. And I'm like, what? And I turn around, and there's this homeless lady, but she's a middle-aged homeless lady.
Yeah.
And she looks like she's got a big beer gut at first glance. But then at second glance, you realize that's not her gut. Those are her breasts, and they're hanging and swinging so low that it looks like a stomach. And I was just like, oh, why did you make me turn around? Because
they were low.
they were terrible.
And she, the bags under her eyes.
She needed a nap.
Yeah.
That was Jim's joke. Jim goes, boy, she needs a nap.
It was so bad. And I remember we all couldn't help but look at her. And at one point, she's like sucking the hot sauce out of a packet. Oh. And she looks up and smiles.
Yeah. I remember, it, like, Paul dated her for, like, a month.
She had a great attitude. When she smiled at me, she had me.
She lit the world up.
Yeah. I mean, she was homeless and stinky and her breasts, you know, scraped on the ground. But that was a million-dollar smile.
And the hot sauce meals she would make.
That was a million-dollar tooth.
But things have changed so much since then,
honestly, and this is not the exaggeration. It took a while to eat there again after that because that was just done.
What's a while though back then? 10 days?
I was saying
stupid.
Now, that's a funny story. And I was just saying that to Brooke the other day. I was talking about something, and I said I would love that for 10 days. And she finally went, "What does that mean?" I know it means something.
Have we told it on this show?
I don't think that's.
Why don't you tell the whole story?
Okay, this is great. the building we moved into on Morrison Avenue, which was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, that was, I think, rented for $500 a month.
Luxury apartment.
Oh, sure. Luxury apartment. Had a swimming pool, barbecues. It was delightful.
The funny thing is, as shitty as that apartment was, it was better than the apartment I used to live in before I moved into this house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's how bad my old apartment was.
That's how far Goebel fell.
He was like,
remember the sweet days when Jim was in my room on an air mattress?
I was asking Jim to move back in. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. You wanted me to come by and walk around in my robe.
But this place, the thing is, like, we kept it pretty clean, but it still had cockroaches because it's one of those buildings that, you know, your neighbors aren't the cleanest, but the walls were paper thin. Remember when the black couple next door had that big fight?
Oh, yeah. We were like, should we call the cops?
It was bad. And it was all, if I remember correctly, it was her screaming and hitting the dude constantly going, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because some shit went down.
Yeah.
But it was a shitty building, and one of the managers was this old Mexican lady who was not good.
Couldn't count.
Wasn't good. But then
she got replaced by this guy. What was his name? Do you guys remember his name?
I want to say Dave.
But Dave's not here. You do this story because
I know exactly what he looked like.
So Dave is this skinny, creepy guy.
Mustache.
They kind of look like Frank Zappa.
That's kind.
But bald and not the charismatic musician.
He reminded me of John Waters. He reminded me of the creepier John Waters.
Yes. Like, John Waters dresses up. This is like a skeevy, dirty shirt, always with some scaggly hair.
It was like John Waters if John Waters wanted people to think he was straight. It was like
Yeah. He clearly was gay and had that, like, thing about him. But, Jesus. I got to remember this whole...
We were in his office.
Okay, right. We're in his office. And first of all, there were these two black women that were talking about applying. And they were like, an application. And they're going through the whole, you know, this is what the rent is. And, oh, it's great. It's near schools and blah, blah, blah. Whatever he's saying. You know, he's trying to pitch the building. And Goebel and I are just looking at each other like, don't move here. Yeah. Don't live here. And then he made some, like... some slight racist remark.
Yeah, because I had just started working at the Comedy Store, And so he was regaling me with all his stories about how he...
But remember, he said something in front of these women. Like,
right. He was talking about Mitzi Shore, and then one of these women was named Mitzi, I guess.
Oh, yeah, and he goes, oh, that Mitzi, but wrong color.
Right. He says, this is Mitzi, but wrong color. And we looked at each other like,
And these women go, what does that mean?
Yeah, they knew, because they didn't know what he was talking about, but they knew that was certainly a racist thing to say.
And he was like, well, you know, I'm just, and he, whatever, he...
And I was like, oh, we were talking about a different Mitzi who was white. I'm trying to, like, cover up for this guy.
For some reason.
Yeah, why? I don't want to get in the middle of something, but I was like, that, you can't say that, can you?
Yeah, you can't. Like that ain't right, okay. Man. What does it matter? And then they, these women left, and so we were in there to, I can't remember what we were going to talk about, like, whatever, get out of our lease, or let us go, or...
let us leave, please.
Yeah, get, you know, these fucking put a saddle on those rats that run around. and so he started talking about...
talking about some dude who was in the building that... Oh, he was trying to kick him out, and his mom came down.
Yeah, he was trying to kick this guy out, and he's like, he's trying to yell at me, and I'm just like, okay... And then he was talking about he had a gun, right? The guy's yelling at me, and then this guy was black. So then this guy, is in the telling of this story, is dropping the N-word.
Right.
And he's like, you know, he's just doing all his and this and that. And Paul and I are like, you manage a building. Like,
you deal with the public.
You there's laws in effect about that say on every, like, apartment application about ethnicity and all this stuff. And then he's like, and then he's telling the story, and he's like, so I just pulled out, you know, I have a little gun in my house. I just pulled out, I just start looking at it. He had like a Coke can that he was demonstrating this with. So he's holding this Coke can as though it's a gun, and he's telling the story about how he just whipped the gun out, and he's just looking at it. He's not pointing it at the guy. He's not threatening, but he's just saying, I got a gun, and he's all threatening me and acting all like this, and you know the way they are. You know, he's just literally just racist, N-word, and just literally just holy. I'm sure he's at a tea party right now.
Yeah.
And then he goes, you know, he's acting all crazy, and then he's like, he acts violent with me. I get him out of here in 10 days.
Like, right. And that was like the key word. We were like, 10 days.
And then
everything was 10 days.
10 days.
What's the other part of the impression?
And then
it's 10
days. He goes, we get him out of here in 10 days. And Goebel and I keep looking at each other like, 10, why does he keep saying it like that? And then the end of the story, he goes, so, you know, he just left. And you know what? He yelled at me and threatened me and tried to call my manager. And I told my manager what he did. And I, you know what? I loved it.
I loved it.
That was the other great catchphrase is I loved
it. Here's the quick follow-up to that story. I moved out before these cats moved out because Mary Jo made the mistake of leaving Chicago and coming with me. And when I moved into the same building, because it was just the easiest thing to do, was there's a vacancy, it's cheap enough, and me and Mary Jo can always obviously relocate later. But when I go down there to do that, and he goes, oh, because those guys want to be alone.
That's right. Because he was in the closet, he assumed we were too.
Yeah. He would always make innuendos like we were gay and sleeping with each other and all that stuff.
At the time, none of that made sense to me because I was like, Graham's a good looking guy, Paul's kind of fat. But now I understand the whole bear thing, but like.
Still.
I know, but did. Yeah. It
was terrible. So that was our first thing that we could cling to that we liked, saying something took 10 days.
10 days.
And we loved it.
Then we did a show at a couple weeks later.
Belly Room.
At the Belly Room, and I told the I loved it 10 days, which got a laugh, and then I told about working for Mr. Oppo.
That's right.
Moving furniture. This friend of mine, Mark, his dad had a moving company. His dad's no longer with us. God rest his soul. And he was a cop from Queens that moved to Southern California, had a moving company, and I spent a summer with these guys working, and he had this real thick New York dialect, and he knew all of the specific names to every piece of furniture. I never knew what he was talking about. I was like, hey, Graham, go grab the hassock, the curio, and the Davenport. And I would be like, I just see a footstool, a cabinet, and a couch. I don't know what you're talking about. So I told that story and everyone's laughing. And I said, I worked for this guy for a whole summer. I lived at his house, and you know what? I loved it.
And it was great because every time you say say that, you feel creepy, and you're like, yeah, so, please stop saying that. It's weird.
Yeah, so anytime you could say, I love it, in a creepy context, that was always the
key. Now, here's the other thing that I always liked, because earlier in the show, obviously, Paul and I enjoyed Graham's old stand-up, but that's a thing we've been doing forever, which is harass the other guy with some past bullshit that should be dead and gone. The thing that we would do to Graham that eventually drove him nuts, if he would ever accidentally say that he loved something, because you'll just say that, and he was like, I was watching the movie and I just loved it, and we'd go, how long did you love it?
Right, how yeah. long?
And you just, and it got to the point where Graham was just angry because you just constantly wanted to go, 10 days.
10 days. I got you here. I love it. Like, you guys are just that literally old. You just started going, say it. Say 10 days. Say I love it. Say I love it. Say I love it. Say 10 days. Say I love it.
That was so fun.
So that could be a new how to be a dick then. If your friend's got a catchphrase.
Right.
Prompt him to do it constantly. Until he gets sick of it.
Yeah. Say it. Say your catchphrase.
So yeah, absolutely.
I remember, and it was Micah, of all people, loved it the most.
Yeah. How long did he?
Yeah, he thought that was hysterical. And he was like, say that again. He thought that was funny. Micah, by the way, made this funny poster for My Generation. I posted it on my Facebook, but he like photoshopped his poster for that show, My Generation, about how lame it was. And at the bottom it said, don't bother, the show's already canceled. It's pretty funny, but I posted it on my Facebook. You can see it.
Brad.
So that's good. It's an end of an era. Now Graham's now married. I'm divorced. Jim, what's different with you?
Oh, you know, stupid as ever.
Still stupid. Did you get any jokes on SNL this week?
No, it's funny. Well, that's not funny. It's an interesting thing. I ran into Barry Sobel. I was doing a show and I ran into Barry Sobel, and we were just chit-chatting, and I mentioned the fact that I'm freelancing for SNL, and he said, oh yeah, I was a staff writer. Ah, we fucking hated the freelance guys. And it makes sense. And believe me, I know how ridiculous this sounds because people always say this, but an objective other party said, your jokes were funnier than the blah blah. And the thing that I realize is, well, they're on staff. They're there to defend their jokes. I'm just extra. So I'm very lucky to even be in the room. So I'm just keeping a good attitude. And what I figure is, come Christmas, when staff writers don't feel like being there, is when I've got my best shot at getting stuff on. However, it's really good to be in the room every week, and I'm getting good feedback that I'm writing funny jokes.
That's good.
So ideally, something happens where I get something on this season in a couple of years. Maybe I'm on staff or whatever. But it's still a ridiculously cool opportunity.
And and the fact that you're working every week, like, it's one thing to, you know, sit down and work on your act and whatever and think about jokes and stuff. You know, it's another thing to do it as a job and know I have to get these done by this time.
Deadline makes all the difference for anything. Like, when I got more serious about stand-up, the thing that I noticed, and not that this is any big revelation, but any time I could get a good big show on the books, and whether it's a big free show regardless, and Tom's Dog free show, whatever it is, but just getting something on the books and saying that something has to occur on this date changes everything. And with writing, that's doubly so, because if you're just writing for yourself, there's always TV that can be watched.
Yeah, exactly. Or writing while you're watching TV. Do you guys see the Facebook movie?
Yes, I did.
No. Did you two see it? I heard it's got so popular now they're going to open up like a Facebook cafe, like a restaurant. But the thing is, if you order the Zucker burger, halfway through the meal, they come and take it away and leave you with like 0.3% of the hamburger. Did you hear that?
That's a great joke.
Did you hear that joke? That story about that?
No, I did not. Where did you hear that?
Yeah.
I made it up. But I was wondering if you guys heard me make it up.
Did you like it or did you love it?
Now, did that get on Fridays? Because I know you're writing freelance for Fridays.
No, it got on Comics Unleashed. Halfway through the show, Byron Allen goes, now, Paul. He's like looking at a letter and he says to the letter, now, Paul, you went to that new Facebook cafe, right? That's what he said through the letter I wrote in my email.
Here's something. I think this happened to Tom, but I'm always making claims about Tom's life for some reason. But every now and then I'll run across the Byron Allen in his process of unleashing comics. And every now and then I see his monologue, and I like watching his monologue because it's often the most absurdly terrible thing in the world. But then every now and then he'll tell some joke that you go, crap, that's a good joke. Wow. And he'll perform it with quality. He'll do it absolutely right. And I'm reminded of the fact that he's been around a long time and wrote for who?
Pryor.
Richard Pryor. He's like, it's...
Now, who did he write for before that?
I get it.
All right, here's another joke I wrote with the help of Scott Holm. This actually happened. He posted on his Facebook that the right wing still constantly calls it Obamacare. They use the phrase Obamacare, and they think that's perfectly fine, and they defend it. But they're clearly using it like to put it down as a derogatory term. And I said, yeah, and if you still call them teabaggers, they get all mad. They say it's the Tea Party movement. Can you please use it by the right name? And they're the ones who started the teabagger thing in the first place. They said, yes, we're teabaggers, until someone went, you know what that means, right? And then they went, I mean, Tea Party. That's what I meant. We're the Tea Party. Scott said, it's like a bunch of like angry Mexican Americans want to protest these new immigration laws, and they call themselves the Dirty Sanchez Movement. We don't want it. We're the Dirty Sanchez Movement. And I said, yeah. Or it's like a musicians union is on strike, and they're like just disrupting all these different recordings, and they make a lot of noise, and they're the Rusty Trombone Movement. And then another friend of mine said, or it's like Republicans who are really prone to violence. They're the Donkey Puncher Movement. I was like, these are all fucking awesome. I'm a donkey puncher, tried and true, man. Don't call me. And the great thing is, if it was Republicans calling themselves that, someone would go, you know what that means? They go, yes, we do know what that means. That's why we're doing it, because we're not stupid. I wanted to go to that John Stewart rally and hold up a sign that had a picture of Hitler with an equal sign and another picture of Hitler.
That's good.
Just say Hitler equals Hitler.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because no one else really equals Hitler but Hitler.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about some television. Now, we talked about pretty much every new show that's on, but I wanted to talk about Hawaii Five-O with Graham here, because Graham is a huge fan of the original, probably the biggest fan of the original Hawaii Five-O I've ever met. And I was never a big fan of the original. Graham, for some reason, as a kid, really took a shine to it. What was it about Hawaii Five-O that you loved so much when you were a kid?
Well, there's the main... Well, one of the reasons is that was the one night of the week I was allowed to stay up past my bedtime.
Okay.
So that was like my whole family would gather around the TV. We had one TV back then, a black and white, and we would watch Hawaii Five-O. And to me, like, I love, obviously, 70s cop shows. And that show was so... You know, there was two types of let me backtrack. Prior to the 70s, cops, TV cops, you never learned anything about their personal life.
Yeah.
It was all just dragnet. They solved the crime. It wasn't until the 70s when they started having shows where you learned about guys had drinking problems or whatever. You know, they got into that police story?
Right.
Was that they really went into that, and they got into that, whatever, the Angie Dickinson. So all those shows started to get into that. Streets of San Francisco, more in their personal life, stuff like that. Hawaii Five-O never did that. Like, every once in a while you'd see McGarrett on his boat or whatever, and there was just something about it as a kid. First of all, growing up in the Midwest, it's this wonderful postcard for Hawaii.
Right.
You know,
it's amazing.
It's gorgeous, and the new show does that well, as in addition. And so to me, it was like McGarrett. Like, I've never seen another TV cop that got. He would get so like offended that you would even think about attempting a crime on my island.
Yeah.
Like, he always had this, like, he wasn't this, like, well, all right, there's guys out there being criminals, and this is my job. Let's, you know, he was just like, how dare you? And he would get so mad, and he was the best cop that's ever been on the... I mean, he had superpowers. I saw him shoot down a plane with one bullet. You know, like, he could pick up a phone and just say... and patch me through to any phone would be patched through to anywhere else on the island, which was McGarrett's prowess. And then just the whole team, you know, always with the chalkboard or an easel, you know, solving a crime. Like, I there was just something about it. And, you know, it was all those great local Hawaiian actors, which again they're using on this new show, which right. I think is a good thing. So you got to see these actors that are not on any other show, because the character actors in all the other TV shows in the 70s and same today are all you can recognize their faces. You see them all over the place. You didn't. They were all Hawaiians.
Yeah. That's interesting. And also because they'd use Don Ho as himself because he's there. Or, like, I remember the best was, there's this guy, Bobby Sands, who I think is dead now, but he was a big-time entertainer in the 60s, and he was, like, an up-and-coming singer and actor, and he had a lot of heat around him, and he was dating Nancy Sinatra briefly. And the story is that he and Nancy broke up because he hit her, and Frank said to him, "Get the fuck out of the country." Like, Frank was so mad, he said, "If you don't leave the country, I'm going to have you killed." And he was like, "What? I can't leave the country." And Frank said, "Go to Hawaii. Don't ever come back to the mainland." So he did. And that's why he's in, like, a handful of Hawaii 5-0 episodes.
One of them is he plays a cat burglar, right?
Yeah, he's a cat burglar / nightclub.
Yeah, he would steal between sets. He would, like, break into...
Because he'd have the greatest alibi. But I remember watching Hawaii 5-0 going, "That's Bobby Sands," and my dad telling me that story about the deal, because you'll never see him on any other show.
No, ever.
Only in shows that took place in Hawaii.
I wish there was some way to know if that's true, because that's one of those, it's a perfect urban legend that isn't true, but it's also, it's Frank Sinatra, so maybe...
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, why else would you move to Hawaii? I mean, not that any one of us wouldn't love to live in Hawaii.
By the way, I like how you say mainland.
Mainland.
That's how it's said, the mainland.
Yeah. And I apologize if you have any... Hawaiians,
Hawaii. We do actually. We have. Oh. There's one girl for sure from Hawaii.
Oh, well, I apologize. I was assuming it was mostly a mainland audience, so I pronounced it correctly. Hawaii.
Hawaii is easier to say, anyways. But I say Hawaii, say Hawaiian, because we're Howleys.
Yeah.
But the other thing about the original show was it wasn't funny at all.
No.
No comedy.
No funny banter. I mean, a once in a while, a little bit of a joke maybe between the other guys.
The closest thing would be when, like, McGarrett calls Chin-Ho Fatso.
Yeah.
"Come on, Fatso. You okay, Fatso?" And, like, he's joking with him. But McGarrett and Jack Lord both, no sense of humor.
None.
They were not funny. And it was almost like sometimes he would try to make a joke and you'd be like, "Ugh, that kind of... that was uncomfortable."
Ooh. I mean, like, sometimes Dano and Chin would joke with each other.
Yeah.
But McGarrett would be like, he was all business. And that's the thing I loved about the show. It was they weren't trying to witty banter. They weren't trying to, there was no romance. McGarrett never, I mean, towards the end, he started to have some romance in the late 70s. The show went off the air in 1980. So they tried to do some romance stuff with McGarrett at the end when the ratings were sagging. But then,
by that time, Jack Lord was like, he was in charge of the whole show pretty much. He was running the show with an iron hand. So if he didn't like something, like I heard the legend is like, there's tons of different women that they tried to introduce in the show. And he was like, "Nope, get her out. She doesn't work. I don't like her." And they'd introduce a new one. Nope,
well, the character Zulu... was played by Kono. No, Kono was played... I'm sorry. Kono was the character. Zulu was the actual actor, and he was a nightclub singer on the islands. And he would, you know, do his... they'd shoot all day, then he... and I interviewed him at the only Hawaii 5-0 convention, which was at the Burbank Hilton.
Nice.
In 1996 or 97. And he told me... Zulu told me that he was really mad and bitter at Jack Lord because Jack Lord got him kicked off the show because he would be out at doing his nightclub act,
right,
and he'd show up on the set a little tired or whatever, and Jack Lord was like, "Nope,
get to work.
I mean, he yelled at producers, I heard stories of. I mean, like, he was like, no nonsense. I read an interview with Jack Lord where they asked what his political affiliations were, and he goes, I'm not going to say that because the minute I say that, I'll alienate half my audience. He was an environmentalist. He was recycling on the set back in the 70s.
Well, that's the other thing is, just like McGarrett, Jack Lord loved Hawaii and knew that it was an awesome place. And that was the other thing. I remember being as a kid, it almost seemed like Hawaii was like Narnia, like a place that we would never get to.
Ever.
And would never see. Now it's so easy. I mean, you can get there pretty quickly.
Well, especially living in California, you can grab a flight and be there in 5 hours. And that was the other thing, too. I felt the same way living in the Midwest. Like, and the women were beautiful. Like, the Hawaiian women are gorgeous. And there's nobody looked like that where I grew up in the Midwest.
Right, and it was beautiful weather every day.
Every day, sunny.
That was crazy.
you know, and you'd get 2.5 months of summer in this, as a kid in Wisconsin.
Right.
And it was like, so, and I just love, I like shows that are about being a detective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're going to show, I hate witty banter, and there's too much of it in the new episode, the new series.
Like, okay, so yeah, let's move on to the new,
okay.
Talk about the new show. Now, you like that it's a good travelogue, and they shoot there, and it looks great, and it's beautiful.
I like that they shoot it. I mean, that was the thing about the original series, and they've done this here. They always say shot entirely on location.
Right.
And I think that's great. I've gotten to work on Oahu several times the last couple years. It's great. You see all of Waikiki, which I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that they're shooting there to keep local production there because it's a really great place to shoot, and the people are really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. But honestly, you know, it's like any it's just one of the cookie cutter CBS cop shows. It could be NCIS Hawaii. I mean, like,
right.
Honestly, that's all it is. It looks that way. The witty banter's that way. Like, that's the thing. I used to watch more of the CSI shows. I don't watch them as much, but they don't have a lot of witty banter. The NCIS has so much stupid witty banter in it.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, and I just. You, there's only a handful of actors and writers that can mesh that and pull that off to where, like, The Wire, there was so much witty banter, but it was the way cops actually spoke. Like, shut up, fucknut.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
The Wire, and this is so written. I feel like I'm watching Fox News. Like, it's just written for old white people. Like, I didn't...
And not all cops are clever. That's the problem, too,
no.
is that it, not only is it witty banter, but it's actually witty banter, which makes it not witty.
No.
Because it's not... Yeah. People don't generally say that kind of
stuff.
Yeah. Like, especially this new one, they want to push this relationship between Dano and McGarrett. And, you know, this Dano character, Scott Kahn, you know, he's from New Jersey or whatever. He doesn't like Hawaii, which I don't believe that. He's like, I like big cities. I don't like the sand. I don't like the beach. Shut up.
Yeah.
Get over it. I mean, I understand maybe you're a city guy, but it's beautiful. There's no way you move to Hawaii and don't fall in love with it. You know, it's fucking gorgeous. And he's like, yeah, this is no good, and it's all about his daughter. But the two of them have this relationship. They want, because they're partners on that show. There's everything. Hawaii Five-O, there was no partners. Even though McGarrett was in charge, he made sure everybody was under him.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody was his underling. But on this new show, they're trying to be partners, and he's trying to get a relationship with Danny and joking around and stuff like that. And I think it falls flat. I think it doesn't. The jokes don't work. And especially because, you know, as much as I love Scott Kahn, Alex Laughlin is just not that funny or engaging to me.
Alex Laughlin is not a funny guy. I mean, like, when he... And that's not an insult. They're just they're asking him to do something that isn't him. Scott and Scott Kahn's funny, but he's funny in those very well written Ocean's movies.
Yeah, or on Entourage.
He's great on Entourage. And they're trying to make him funny with this CBS, you know, milquetoast funny dialogue that is so just like from 30 years ago. And I just I like Grace Park, and I like Daniel Kim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the backstory that people think he's crooked.
Yeah.
Like, he stole money. I like that. I mean, I like the episode I saw, a local actor that was big, you know, big Hawaiian guy, Samoan dude who's undercover, and he doesn't like, you know, he doesn't like Chin Ho, and I like the fact that him and Grace are related. I think that was interesting, but like... This is just, like I said, it's NCIS Hawaii. It's not, they didn't do anything, you know, like to me, if I were to remake Hawaii Five-O, I would keep all of the like, no nonsense, we're going to solve the crime, but just make it grittier the way, you know, things you couldn't do on TV in the 70s that you can now.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I'd make The Shield.
Right.
Hawaii. Because, I mean, that's the thing. Going back to the original series, and granted, I'm not saying this original series is some sacred cow. It had a lot of cheesy... 70s cop bad acting and you know, kind of trite storylines and stuff like that, but they had a lot of stuff with the Hong Kong Chinese mafia. Wo
right.
Fat was a red agent.
Yeah That was the thing,
you know,
and people don't remember that from the original Hawaii Five-0 was like this new one in that They were a special squad appointed by the governor to deal with specific crimes that are specific to Hawaii.
Yes.
Because, you know, here in the mainland, in anywhere in America, you don't have pineapple smugglers.
Yes.
You don't have,
tsunami warnings.
Yeah, it's not, there's not such a big Asian slave trade here in California as there is in Hawaii. Well,
you gotta ask around.
Yeah, you have to look harder, yeah.
Yeah.
But in Hawaii, it's every corner. Like, hey, can I get an Asian slave? They're like, yeah, hold on. Let me call it.
No, they dealt with so much stuff that had to do with you know, the politics, too. I mean, they dealt with the Vietnam War a lot there because there's such a... I mean, that's the thing that's very unique to Hawaii is that's like the second largest industry other than tourism is the military.
Yeah, and also, and there's still people on that island who, you know, who were born there and remember when it wasn't a part of America.
Yes.
And they have children who remember that, and maybe that, you know, they're very racist against white people because of the way they're brought up. And they dealt with that on the old show quite a bit.
Oh, they dealt with that a lot.
I don't want you Hollies in my house or whatever. And I remember there was that show Birds of Paradise with Tim Busfield.
What's the origin of Holly?
I believe it was the term that the original Hawaiians used when, like, Captain Cook first came to the island, like, the way that they spoke. In the way that honky comes from the Caucasians talking through their nose and makes their, like, that's what I think, but I can't say for certain.
I mean, it's a Hawaiian word, so.
Right.
I'm sure it means something different.
No, but they dealt with all that stuff. They dealt with the people who on the islands in the original Hawaii Five-0 that didn't want the Haoles there. The people that wanted sovereignty because it became a state in 1958.
Yeah.
60, something like that? Like, it was a new state when the show started
deal.
In 1968, 69.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, it's the only state that has its own language, used to have a king.
Yes.
You know, that's a big deal. And there's still statues of that king. There's still people who speak the language fluently. That's a big, you know, it's like, and I would think now with the, immigration being such a hot button issue, that would be a big deal.
Get it? Because it's such, especially Oahu. The island of Oahu with the city of Honolulu is an Asian melting pot.
Yeah.
Like, you have all, and it's, there's such an influence, and you see, like, there's a Chinatown, there's such a Japanese influence, and they should deal with that on the show, because that's a really unique, to me, Hawaii is like New Orleans. It's like America in name only, but it is this really separate culture, like you say, with a separate language.
Yeah, I want to see the episode where, you know, where they deal with the dudes who move to Hawaii because they know they can have sex with a hot Asian woman every night.
Yeah.
You know, the dudes who go there because they have, like, a really sick fetish for Asian women, and they get involved
there
in that.
There is nothing sick about that.
But there are guys who do that, just like the guys who move to the Philippines because they like having sex with young Filipino boys.
Well, what about, like, the surf culture on the North Shore? Like, if you're an outsider trying to surf big waves in December, in the winter, when the big waves hit the North Shore, like, there's this whole hierarchy, there's gangs, like, it's, if you don't, you're trying to just, I'm gonna surf, and if you gotta prove yourself, if you do something stupid, dangerous, drop in on somebody in a 20-foot barrel, you get your ass kicked, you get punched in the face, and they tell you, they'll block you, they're like, you're not getting on another wave, like, let's deal, like, wouldn't that be...
Yeah, that's like...
Let's deal with that.
It's like Point Break, that's why Point Break was so cool, because there were people who are actually like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they surf and jump out of buildings and jump out of planes and they...
And rob banks,
exactly. But they're, I mean, they don't, like the dudes on the North Shore, they don't necessarily rob banks, but they're dangerous guys. I'm sure some of them have fucking stolen cars and run with gangs and carry guns and do shit they shouldn't. And maybe they rob a bank or two.
Well, it's like...
there's only one bank on...
It's like what made The Wire so great.
Yes. First National Bank of Hawaii. That's what it's called.
Yeah, that's a real bank.
Hawaiian Batman is always there.
But that's what made the Wire so great was they dealt with real stuff that's going on specifically to Baltimore, but also in major cities in America, specifically, like, I loved The Wire so much. I don't know Baltimore, but growing up in Chicago, that kind of backroom politics and they gotta grease the wheels and all that shit, you know, that really spoke to me. And like you say, they should deal with, like, there's also the old Howleys and the old Portuguese. They're the money people that control the islands. Hmm. Let's deal with that. The old money that truly controls the islands, and that's why there's so much resentment from the Hawaiians, is because they're like, man, these rich Portuguese and white people are still controlling shit. Like, right. This is nonsense. Yeah, like that, there's a big sovereignty movement. They want to secede. They want to go back to being
just like in Alaska. Yeah, I'm sure there's all this. There's like if someone were to make a cop show about Alaska, mm-hmm. it'd probably be pretty cool, because I'm sure there's like all kinds of Russian mob shit that goes on there.
Well, it's like The Shield. The Shield was great with the Armenian mob and all the stuff that goes on in L.A. The Mexican mafia that controls the gangs and all that. Like, that was great. Plus, big city politics.
You're right. We do a show set in L.A. That's true.
That's never happened.
Kind of like
maybe like CSI
stuff, like Hollywood stuff.
I'll tell you this. I watched the first three episodes of Hawaii Five-O, and it's I'm done. I'm not going to watch anymore. But I can't believe I've seen all the episodes that have been on the air so far, and there's been nothing about street racing. I mean, that's a huge deal in Hawaii. Like, kids are dying, and, the kids think it's cool to get together and trick out your car and then fucking race it and crash and die.
Yeah.
That's a huge fucking thing. It's like the Fast and the Furious, but for real.
I didn't know that was going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Who fucking knows?
Wouldn't that make for a great cop episode? I mean, they're missing so many opportunities. And now, in the way that they dealt with these soldiers coming home from Vietnam in the first one, there's all these soldiers coming back. I was in Afghanistan with a whole unit from Hawaii. Like, let's bring that in. These guys coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, perfect timing. We got another perfect war for this.
I mean, come on. Yeah, like, there's all this stuff going on.
Any of the,
Obama is from, the president is from Hawaii. And there's these dummies who think that his birth certificate is fake, and that infuriates Hawaiians.
Yeah.
I was there. I was surfing with guys like, I went to private school with him. We called him Barry. He's not Muslim.
They're missing the boat. The bottom line is it's sad because, if the show was just, bad and stupid, I could say, well, they tried something and, wow, they missed it. But I'd give them credit for trying.
This show could be anywhere. This could be Miami. Exactly. It's honestly, they could take the same show, put it in Denver, and just shoot some B-roll of ski slopes and then have the same...
It's wasted is the bottom
line. And Grace Park is a snowboarder.
But the fact that...
There's nothing other than
now,
the...
What classic snowboarding character would she
be? What classic snowboarding dude who could she be?
But that's the thing about any of the, relaunches is seems to be the constant mistake. It's the constant. It's just, I don't even know if it's a mistake, because you have to think about something to make a mistake. Because what it is it's like all – it's a relaunch in name only, but they do that over and over again, which is, this is a recognizable name, so we'll make this cop show. But we're not – if you bring
What they forget is there was something about the original that made it popular, and they forget to identify that and hold on to that.
Exactly. Like, if you were to bring back Dragnet, which would be a terrible idea.
They did. They brought that back with Al Bundy.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Serious version?
Yes.
Okay, and it was terrible, right?
Yeah, it was pretty boring.
Yeah.
It was a lot like Law & Order with Al Bundy is what it was. The crazy part was his partner was that kid Ethan Embry, who played the kid in Dutch. So it was like a Dutch reunion. It was Al Bundy and the kid from Dutch reunited. Now they're cops, and it was the final straw where Ed O'Neill said, "I guess no one's ever going to take me seriously ever again."
And he
went back to doing comedy.
I love if television tried to do this. This would be the show where I would jump on board and hope for the best. I loved Wild Wild West. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that if they brought it back, I would cry after I saw the pilot, and then I'd be done forever.
Get ready to cry.
Are they doing it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll watch, and you would hope. But here's the thing. Slick that up. Make that... Take away the hokiness. Get rid of the train. You know what? You don't have fucking Wild Wild West. And what you're describing in Hawaii Five-O, the fundamentals of who Garrett, right?
McGarrett.
McGarrett, I don't know.
Gary.
The fundamentals of Johnny, of McGarrett, the fundamentals of who he is as a guy, that's Hawaii Five-O. Everything else you described, true. But McGarrett, he's the flavor, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing too,
and
like,
everything goes down.
And the other thing
from
too, like I said, like while yes, the, while the old show is not a sacred cow, and you watch, and there's a lot of cheesy stuff to it. At the time in the 70s, if you put it in context, they were tackling tough issues because sure. cop shows prior to that did not deal with this stuff. The way that they dealt with it in the 70s. They were dealing with heroin smuggling.
Yeah, especially drugs. There was such a big
yes.
deal.
And closer to actual
I mean,
real...
there was women that got... I mean, there was, like, hardcore rape and sexual assault, which was, like... And they and there's closer... an episode where McGarrett... on there, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a, this woman gets sexually assaulted. And they find the guy. And the end of the episode, McGarrett says... He goes, look, this guy, it was some rich kid, you know, forced, you know, took advantage of some local girl or something like that and was going to try to have his daddy get him out of it.
Right.
And she was like, oh, I'm just a poor little Hawaiian girl and this rich Howley, you know, what am I going to do? And McGarrett looks at her and goes, look, he's going to have a good, well-paid lawyer. That's true. But we're going to have even better lawyers and there's no way he's going to get off the hook. And it was just like... Wow, like that was intense. Like that was the subject matter was really intense, and the way they handled it for the time was amazing. Do they watch The Shield? The people who write the show, have they seen The Wire?
The funny thing is, if that show came on and it was called Hawaii Squad or Hawaii Cops or something, it would be a perfectly fine show about cops in Hawaii. But to say it's a remake and you know give it the same theme
Here's
song,
my
and the
idea.
Same characters.
We remake Police Squad, serious version.
Yeah, great idea.
But no, what I was going to say just was like you talk about the drugs thing, and then I'm reminded of seeing.
No,
like,
wait, let me stop you.
They had an episode. They had an episodes where soldiers from Vietnam were involved in heroin smuggling, which actually happened. And a lot of, and this is real, a lot of soldiers got hooked on heroin when they were in Vietnam. And they dealt with that on a cop show that took place in a vacation destination.
Right.
So that's what it's made that show deal. Amazing. That was like they really were, again, in context
of
that.
Well, the counterexample, too, is that every drug reference prior to that in television cop shows was pretty much just an excuse to explain why the hippie movement was bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was just like pot jumped off a building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Smoking a cigarette. Yeah, you're nuts.
Here's what I want somebody to do. Take the scripts for Police Squad and film an episode, but same script, same dialogue, totally serious. Do the exact same dialogue, but don't play it for laughs. Do it totally serious.
Kind of what they did in Police Squad.
Except, I mean, don't even take time for the joke. Just... Don't even take time. And then when somebody says, Shirley, you blah, 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 they don't call me Shirley. Go, ha, good one. But seriously. And get back into the screen. Get back into it. Acknowledge the jokes and don't leave time for the things that aren't jokes. You know what I'm saying? Play it fucking, I think that would be awesome. And then you have guys like, you know, they would have jokes like where the real tall dude would come in and they'd make jokes about that. Well, have him played by a normal dude. Where they say, hey, you can't wear that hat. Sorry, chief. And he puts his hat off. No big deal. That would
big
be great.
Smudge of banana right here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, oh, sorry. I want to see that. Oh, fuck, that would be awesome. All right, well, we've talked the shit out of this. So let's move on.
I can talk about this forever.
Yeah, it's Graham's new podcast. Hawaii. Uh-oh.
You idiot.
Trivia question this week. Let's see. 2 weeks ago, I believe Jim got the question right. Once again, Jim is on fire.
Yeah, I've actually been getting trivia questions.
Yeah, it was the Mike Schmidt show. Yeah, you got the question right.
Someone
about
Someone is drinking ginkgo biloba.
And but I'm doing this show with Mike Rotman called Stupid for Dexter. If you go to stupidfordexter.com every Monday night. These two girls host Kat Steele and Mandy McNamer. That's not her name. Mandy Schneider hosts a show called Stupid for Dexter, and they recap the show and they have cool stuff about it. And it's part of Rotman's garage thing, you know, where he does Stupid for Movies and Stupid for Football. And I'm on that show every week, and people try to stump me. So tune into that, stupidfordexter.com.
Brad.
But last week, this guy, Sean Foster, stumped me with a really good trivia question, and he won a prize. And I said I would mention his name on the air and send him a magnet. So way to go, Sean Foster. But the trivia question this week is about Who's the Boss?
Okay.
The show Who's the Boss with Tony Danza. And that is the question. Who was the boss?
Well, good question.
The question is actually, which SNL alum played a cop in an episode of Who's the Boss? It's that simple. Okay. And you can make an educated guess, but that's as simple. He came to the door in an episode, and he was giving someone a ticket. But he came to the door of the house. Okay. By the way, I got pulled over by a cop last night for the first time in years because he thought I was drunk. Well, actually gave me a test.
Were you?
No. I had spent all day at Disneyland. I was tired. And I told him, I'm just really tired. He's like, okay, well, why don't you get a cup of coffee?
Dan Aykroyd.
No, that's
Joe Piscopo.
Nope. Tom?
I was going to say Aykroyd.
Well, you still want to say that?
No.
Okay, do you have another guess then?
Chevy Chase.
No. So if you know who that was,
it was Chevy Chase.
You can write to Paul at thekingoftv.com. And we have a new prize. Graham was kind enough to bring in one of his environmentally correct CDs called The Comedian's Got a Boo-Boo. He autographed it, and I will send it to you. There's a cool picture of Graham with Choco Sticks inside and a hot lady wearing a Palm Strike t-shirt. That's Who's that lady?
Just this girl, Stephanie McNick-Leach. She's a model in Florida. She was in L.A., took some photos.
Nice. So, yeah, so you can take Graham's CD, listen to great tracks like NyQuil, Local News, Babbo, What's Up for the Weekend.
Those last two are lies.
All classic bits.
That CD autographed, I will personally autograph copies if you buy it at comedyfilmnerds.com. We sell autographed copies of that and numerous other fine.
Yeah, what other stuff can you do at comedyfilmnerds.com, for those of you who don't know, is Graham's podcast he does with Chris Mancini. Mm-hmm. They were kind enough to have me on a guest.
Yes, and you write on occasion, you write a column for us.
Right, for the Paul's Big Screen, or the King's Big Screen, or whatever it's called. But it's a website, and it's a podcast, and you do that every week?
Yes, it's a weekly show. It's available on iTunes. We have an iPhone app, nice. Which will, if you get the iPhone app, it live streams the show, so it doesn't take up space on your phone. It's got special features in it and bonus content. And
you guys sell all kinds of crazy
stuff. We sell all kinds of stuff. We just have Doug Benson's new DVD CD combo, courtesy of Comedy Central Records, called the Doug Benson Hypocritical Oaf. Those are autographed copies. We've got Chris's father parenting book, Pacify Me, a handout for the freaked out new dad. We've got short films for download. We've got my CD, Palm Strike shirts, any Jackie Cation stuff. Matt Weinhold stuff.
Nice.
Everything. Anything a young comedy film fan could possibly want.
Yeah, so go there. And there's always discounts available?
We've been putting some coupon codes in the iPhone special features, in the iPhone app. So, yeah, we do coupons every once in a while.
So it's a good show. So listen to that and listen to Graham's CD, and you can order that. There, and you win it if you know the answer. And I still got all kinds of crap from Comic-Con and stuff to give away, and magnets and buttons. But speaking of who's the boss, let's wrap up this day with talking about Tony Danza. Teach Tony Danza, which is an amazing show on A&E. Now, did either of you guys see Graham and Jim? Have you seen any of it?
I have not. Hell no.
Okay, but Tom, you saw the whole thing.
I watched.
So what is the show?
The first episode.
The premise of the show is, he says, I got my degree in teaching, and I wanted to go back and do something that I could be proud of, is basically the bottom line. So he goes to this public school in Philadelphia and teaches a group of kids English. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but it seemed to me that he was teaching one class a day. Because it's always the same kids that they talk to.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got a helper who's a real teacher who sits in the class with him, who he goes through. And I'll say, when the show started, I was like, this is stupid. But as it went on, they talked to the kids a lot. I'd say it's 50-50, Danza and then the kids also. And that part I like, because some of the kids want to be on TV. Some of the kids are like, this one black kid is like, my education's important to me, and if he's just here to screw around, I'm not down with that. And that was funny. My favorite was this one girl who went, well, I knew who Tony Danza was because I love the 80s. And you look at her, and her hair is huge.
Yeah.
And she's wearing, like, these fucking 80s clothes. She looked like Tootie. And I was like, yeah, you love the fucking 80s. And that was kind of funny. But the worst part was the beginning, the first episode, the beginning of it. He's in his class, getting all ready for class, and he gets called to the principal's office, and the assistant principal is, like, taking him down because he didn't sign in. He's like, Mr. Danza, what time does your day begin? 8:23. I was here at 8:20. I'm supposed to be here at 8:23. Yes, and what time are you supposed to sign in? Oh, geez, I guess I forgot to sign in. Yes, Mr. Danza, I don't know if you're here unless you sign in. Now, please sign in, sir. And he's trying to sign in. She goes, Mr. Danza, that's not your name. Sign next to your name. And he's like, look, she goes, Mr. Danza, stop being so vain and put your glasses on. And he's like, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry. He puts his, I was like, come on. Really? Is this really what it was like? And then he goes into the principal's office, and she kind of lays it out. She's like, you know, my first priority is the kids. And, you know, I want this to work out, but if it's not going to, I'm going to get rid of you because these kids need an education. And that was kind of real because it was almost like her defending her decision to do this. Because I'm sure it was a big deal, and didn't he say some people were really against it? Like, I guess he said in the show he got a letter from an ex-teacher who said, this is a mistake. Yeah. You're doing a disservice to these kids by doing this. So he was really honest about it. And it seems to me like they gave the kids and Danza all iPhones so they can record their I don't know what
or
they gave
flip
them.
Flip cameras or something.
Yeah, flip cams or something, because there's all these scenes where they're talking to the camera and they're holding it right up to their face. It's clear that they're holding it in their hand and talking right to it. So for Danza, it's kind of off-putting because it's his giant fucking head and him going, oh, that was hard. Oh, that was a rough day. Oh, let me tell you. That was a rough day. Oh, I get no respect, Angela. But the kids talk to the camera all the time, and they have real shit to say. The other thing that you would love is he's also the assistant football coach. And that's a fucking joke. Because these kids, like most football teams, they know what they're doing. Unlike kids in school who don't want to be there, the kids on the football team want to be there. They all want to be there. And because anybody who doesn't want to be on the football team and goes through the shit you go through, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah, I know.
Why would you bust your ass if you don't want to be there? So those kids are there, and they know more about football than he ever would, because he says, I was a boxer. You know, I never played football. But the coach is like, and Mr. Danza's new, and he's going to tell you guys something. And he starts talking, and he goes on, and they do that time-lapse thing where they're like, 3 hours later, it seems like. And all the kids are saying, boy, he wouldn't stop talking. And the coach even said, dude, what are you doing? Why are you talking so much? And that was, seemed to me, that was the message for the first episode.
That he said he was talking too much.
Stop talking.
Yeah, talking to the kids too much, talking to the team too much.
See, I thought everybody. That, in that scene, though, I thought the coach was a real prick. Because the coach goes, okay. The coach just kind of out of the blue goes, okay, now we got the special coach here, and he's going to give you a speech. And then he wanders out of the room.
Yeah, he goes into his office.
They just show him in the office, like, shaking his head. It's like, what? You put him there and told him to do that. And you could have come back and stopped him at any point.
Yeah, you could have easily come in and gone, all right, thanks, Tony. All right, everybody ready? Let's go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he didn't. He just left it there, obviously, for show. And it's weird because it's on A&E, so it's not on VH1 or Bravo, so it's not really, one of those crazy fucking stupid shows like Real Housewives where they want them to get into stuff. They're very respectful of the school and of the kids, and so that's fine, but still there's some stuff that's so obviously manufactured.
That's the problem with all these reality shows. It's so manufactured, it's so obvious. It's just like, they're just manufacturing drama, and it's always like, ooh, all these shows, like, who's going to get kicked out of the cooking show? Who fucking cares?
Yeah, they wanted to make a big deal. He put, like, hand sanitizers on both sides of the doorway, and he's making a big deal when they come in. Hey, do me a favor when you come in. Sanitize your hands. You know, just sanitize. He says that to literally every kid who comes through the door as they're coming in the morning, because he wants to make sure every one of them. And I'm sure at the time they were filming it, swine flu was a big deal, and that's all fine. We should all try to be clean and not spread diseases. But why do you make a big deal out of that? Why do you want to paint him as some weird germaphobe?
How many... are there more episodes to come?
There's going to be 7 episodes, I believe.
Yeah.
I think we should talk about it every week, just so that you can get your desire to do a Tony Danza out of your system. And then, if it's not enough, we'll pick some random show where you talk about the show, but as if Tony Danza were watching it.
This is a great show. I tell you, this Survivor show is great. They voted that guy off. It was hilarious. I love it. This is great.
Tony Danza goes to Hawaii.
Oh, I tell you, Hawaii is the greatest. Me and my kid are here. Alyssa Milano's here. She's like my daughter. You know, she's not really my kid. That's what he does. Yeah. He makes jokes that he, and then he has to explain. I swear to God, I saw him once on his talk show. He said, he was telling, like, doing opening stand-up on his daytime talk show, and he goes, so have you may have heard of Harriet Myers? She got denied for being on the Supreme Court. So now George Bush's next bitch, Mike Myers. He's gonna pick Mike Myers. No, just kidding. He says that. He goes, no, just kidding.
Oh, I love the really? Just kidding. I love really? The just kidding.
So he didn't pick Mike Myers. Okay.
Oh, he was going to pick a comedian, but then he'd know you're joking.
Thank you, Tony. Oh, you had me scared.
That's the kind of guy when he tells that he'll tell you some dumb joke, and like if you saw him at a party, he'd tell you some dumb joke and you didn't laugh. He would assume you didn't get it and then explain it to you.
Yeah, you see it.
No, what I meant was the dog, what it had
his name was Angela Bauer. See, it's because the dog, the people thought that.
But I also guarantee you that if he did
show.
That at a party to any one of us, we couldn't stop laughing. It wouldn't be a problem because you'd be like, this is fucking Tony Danza. What the fuck is going on? Because,
see, like you go to the dentist at 2:30, see, because you had tooth. If you put a stop in a different place, you say 2:30, but then you say tooth.
Yeah, hurting, yeah, I got it. I got it. Leave me alone.
I love you, Grandma. You're great.
I'm just trying to get to the spinach dip. Leave me the fuck alone.
Hold on, let me do a tap for you.
Why are you dancing? We're at a party. Get out of here. It makes no sense.
Oh, well, I haven't watched the second episode, but the show is funny because it's in Philadelphia, which I like, because they could have easily done it in L.A., and it would have been so fucking cheesy and shitty, and the idiot kids who just want to be on TV, because these kids... It's not like any of them have aspirations to be on TV.
I'm sure at least one of them does, just because everybody does, but instead of all of them. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Right. The best was the first day he's talking, and he's like, any questions? And this kid goes, yeah, don't you think it's funny that you're teaching English? That was awesome. Everybody laughs, and he's like, oh. But then they showed, like, upcoming scenes, and, like, in one scene he busts this kid. Like, remember that one scene where he goes, I think his name is Agamemnon or something? He goes, hey, Memnon, that's 2 strikes, okay? 3 and you're out of here. And the kid just, like, nods and goes back to his work. And that seemed kind of real to me, because he's...
I don't think his name was Agamemnon, but...
It was something like
that.
It was
Algernon,
okay. Algernon, there you go. Hopefully they'll read flowers for Algernon. That kid will go. Did you guys watch Raising Hope this week, or this past week?
No.
Yeah?
I just canceled my cable. I'm just...
Oh, wow. It was really funny, because... The baby is starting to walk, starting to crawl in the house. And they're like, well, we got to baby-proof the house now. And they got all these pool chemicals in the house because they're pool cleaners. And the kid says to Garrett Dillahunt, well, Dad, we got to move these pool cleaners out. And he goes, well, I suppose I could put them in the truck, but then I got all the lawn poison there, and I could bring those in. And he goes, oh, pick your poison. I just got that. I fucking laughed so hard. And I was like, this is why I watch that show. Just for shit like that. Yeah, it was a funny episode.
I like that show. I don't know why it's so reviled.
I don't know. Well, but it got picked up for the full season.
Well, good. I'm glad somebody's
which is
not
funny.
Crazy.
Yeah, and but whereas Running Wild, which I think is just as funny, people are not taking to it at all.
And I think it's a little rough still.
I think it's real funny.
I think it's found its balance yet.
So you just don't watch TV anymore?
I'm on the road so much that I just, you know, and things I specifically want to watch, I can watch online.
Right, that's true.
So I just was like, why am I paying all this money for a home phone and cable?
And your wife doesn't even understand half the shit that's on TV.
Well, her English has gotten a lot better, so she understands it, but she doesn't care. She doesn't watch it.
But didn't she want to keep cable for the Portuguese channel?
Yeah, the Brazilian channel. Yeah, I wish
Brazilian network.
God, I wish they had that.
No, are you kidding me? Oh fuck, I wouldn't leave the house. They had a Brazilian network, 24/7 of big asses. I'm on board.
Yeah, that's all it is. Just samba dancing,
women in those fucking headdresses and the big asses.
That's all that country is.
Well, that's what it would be, because that would be the TV they'd make, right? Like Spanish TV.
Well, no, there's a channel. Actually, you can get Globo TV, which is their big channel in Brazil.
Like Telemundo, but for Brazil.
Yeah, it's like, and you can get that on some satellites, and it's, you know, they have novellas and regular shows, and they
those
have...
Those women got some big asses, though, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, Brazil's nice, man.
Yep.
When are you going to have your Brazilian wedding, by the way?
Soon.
Yeah? I can't wait to go down there without my girlfriend. Because what happens in Brazil stays in Brazil.
And in your case, I believe that'll be nothing.
Right. Well, but it'll stay there.
Yeah.
That's all that matters,
that's
as long as
right.
it stays there. All right.
So I did want to say about Teach. I think the thing that makes teach work. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. Like, I watched it because you told me to. But I think the thing that makes it work, and I think maybe this is what I feel about all reality shows now that I think about it, is Tony Danza is, like, completely sincere. He really wants to do this, and even he wants to do it well.
Even though it seems like he's fooling himself, it's almost like, well, he's too stupid to fool himself or to fake sincerity. He really wants to be there. He really seems like he wants to do it. And even though everyone told him this is a bad idea, it's almost like, yeah, what else do I have to do?
Oh, no. What did he say?
What else I got to do?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't go back. I mean, I've done everything else. I've conquered the world of TV and movies and the theater and the stage.
Wait, movie? I'm sorry, what movies?
You never saw Going Ape?
I'm just kidding. That was a terrible movie.
She's out of control. Girl. Oh, that's right. He was the dad. Yeah, she's
that's
out of control.
Right. He was. Don't forget that.
What shit. Other movies?
Hey, Man on the Moon?
No.
No, I wasn't in that.
Oh, yeah, briefly. Well, you were actually, just playing your you got your cat.
Actually, I was the only one who wasn't in it. Everybody else from Taxi.
Oh, really? He didn't do it?
No, he was on Broadway at the time. He was the one guy from Taxi who couldn't be in it because he was on Broadway. Broadway.
That's great.
I remember once there was a special Sammy Davis Jr.'s like 75th birthday, and everybody came out. Sinatra came out and sang a song, and a bunch of people came out. Gregory Hines came out and did this awesome fucking dance. And Tony Danza comes out and dances for Sammy Davis Jr. And I was like, wow, that is... Wow. That, I gave him credit just for having the balls to
That's
do
rad.
That. To come out and dance after Gregory Hines in front of Sammy Davis
Jr.
Wow.
But here's what I'll say.
Right?
For...
What ball?
That's like me going out and, like, you know, shooting free throws for fucking Michael Jordan or Larry Bird.
Hey, we're all here to honor Michael Jordan as the greatest basketball player who ever lived. Larry Bird is the host. Let's all watch Bird and Scottie Pippen play a little one-on-one. All right, that was great. Now, Graham Elwood in a free show, in a free throw clinic. Let's check that out.
I told you about my dog.
Free throw clinic. All right. Anything else?
Quick story.
Wrap it up.
Yeah,
I gotta go.
Quick story.
You've been here since 5 o'clock.
God damn it. Let me leave.
So I'm doing one of these dumb little open mics. It's where I saw Barry Sobel, our friend Barry Sobel, and there's a guy doing his political jokes about the governor's race.
Yes.
And he starts talking about what a terrible Republican choice we have, and he never corrects himself. He goes, "And have you seen this with Meg Ryan?" And he can't, of course, never connects with why this isn't working. Like, you know,
I would have loved that.
Meg Ryan, you know, of course, going against career politician Charlie Brown. What the fuck, man?
But so nobody ever yells Whitman.
No, because I was with a group of comics and some people were like about to say something. I'm like, shh.
Of course,
because I'm like, I have to has to last for a while because it's hard to be here. This is a great. This is what makes it okay.
That's true. That's true. Oh, that's great, Meg Ryan. Yeah. We're going to vote for Meg Ryan. I heard Derrick Brown called her a whore.
Oh, man.
Brutal. Because she cheated on Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid. Awesome. Now, isn't he running for Senate?
Right.
Yeah. And everyone said, get your ass to Sacramento, Quaid.
Go, Quaid.
He's running for governor, oddly enough. Another guy. Quaid for governor.
No.
I endorse Quaid. Thank you, Quaid.
Was that is that more Tony Danza?
Yes. Angela is my daughter, Quaid.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
I'm just
that was
kidding,
not
Quaid.
Serious. I am actually not Dennis Quaid.
Junk.
I am only not really running for governor.
Now I will dance.
Hello, Fred Astaire. I know you will like my dance.
Yes, you dance. Oh, you up.
Jesus.
Oh, fuck. All right. Well, if people want to know where you're going to be on the road and what you're going to be doing and what shows, where should they go to hear about
that? They can go to GrahamElwood.com. They can also go see me on Facebook. I'm also Twitter at Graham Elwood. And, of course, Comedy Film Nerds.
Okay. And Comedy Film Nerds Twitter's also? At Comedy Film
at
Nerds?
At Comedy Film Nerds, yeah. I mean, if you just go to GrahamElwood.com, you'll get all of this information. There's links to all this stuff.
It's your one-stop shopping.
Boom!
Oh, I thought we were going to get through a whole episode without you going, boom!
Boom! No. Sorry, assholes. That's my
thing. 113 mark, he said it. All right, Jim, hit us with a mashup. See if Graham can guess it, and we'll get out of here.
Mrs. Johnson, there's no reason to be too upset about this document. It's a standard form. It's just in case you get incapacitated, decisions can be made for you. Just in case, like, if I'll make you horny. It's important that we do this. Now, if you look at subsection B.
Austin Powers of Attorney?
Yeah. Subsection 7B, which is...
Boom! There it is again, assholes.
Nicely done, sir.
Austin Powers of Attorney.
Oh, jeez.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That was terrible.
Oh, Austin, come on. Austin Powers of Attorney. Just kidding.
Hey, you know me, honey? Just kidding. Oh, wow. Horrible.
Wrap it up.
All right, well, that was awesome. That is the end of the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and go fuck yourself.
Suck it.
There's a time for love and a time for living. Take a chance and face the wind. An open road and a road that's hidden. A brand new life around the bend. There were times lost a dream or two. Found a friend, and at the end was you. There's a path to take and a path not take. The choice is up to you, my friend. I took cool, but you might awake to a brand new life. Brand new life. Thank you very much.